Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018. And I'm now here with Cultured Thug. Now, could you, hello, welcome, and could you briefly introduce yourself to, I mean, I know most people, you're one of the most requested people, by the way, for Millennial. So a lot of, I know that a lot of viewers know you already, but could you just introduce yourself to people who don't?
Yeah, first, hello, Woes. Thank you for having me on. I'm Cultured Thug. I have a YouTube channel. I create content trying to educate on what third position philosophy is. It comes under many names. People call it fascism. In Brazil, they called it integralism. In Mexico, they call it synarchism. In Romania, they called it legionarism, et cetera, the flange in Spain. But it all stems from a third position thought. And I had noticed that I was running into a lot of people online that called themselves fascist or fasci, but they really didn't know what it really was. And then I noticed you'd had people, it's been going on for quite a while. The right would call the left fascist and the left would call the right fascist. And people would be confused. Like, how are both sides calling each other fascist? And why are all these people so afraid to be identified as a fascist? So I took it upon myself just to put out videos that are essentially book breakdowns of specific books on the philosophy of third position ideology, on books on the history of some of the major players of the third position thought. And I put all these out there, not, and I put my 2 cents in and my channel. I have some poems I've done and I've done some other things that kind of go venture into my own little thing. But it's mainly around trying to educate people on what third position thought is, the history of it, where it comes from, to kind of stop the confusion of it, because to me, it's a very positive thing. So I hate that there's this kind of dialect to where people are supposed to be afraid of the term. And that's a pejorative. You call someone like, oh, you're a fascist. No, you're a fascist. It's no, the real fascist will tell you I'm the fascist. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a positive thing. And so the whole point of that channel was to do that, was to get that information out there and give people not only the universal concepts of third position philosophy, but to understand it's also nationally organic. Like when you look at third position thought, where it sprung up in Brazil, where it sprung up in Mexico, where it sprung up in Chile, where it sprung up in England, where it sprung up in Spain, Romania, Italy, so on and so forth, they were, all had universal concepts of being anti-materialistic, anti-individualistic, and also trying to create a better man physically, mentally, spiritually, and kind of unify that man towards a common goal. This is how we are anti-materialist. We actually put an emphasis on a cause and reason to life and direct society towards that. So while they had these universal themes amongst all these third position countries, they had different economics. Some were corporatists, some were syndicalists, some were corporate syndicalists, et cetera, et cetera. You even had people like Engelbert Dollfuss using international finance and in Austria for the time he was there. So you've seen many different economic outlooks through different third position countries, different laws, different heritage, different religions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a nationally organic political concept, but at the same time, there's a universal root in the anti-materialism, the anti-individualism, and kind of having a common goal and a direction for people and a kind of a desire, the rebirthing the masculine qualities of seeking to become more, seeking to become better, seeking to do that not only within yourself, but in your civilization as well. So that's what I try to explain on the Culture Thug channel. And I try to source as many people as I can, and so people can't say, well, this is just your perception. It's like, no, I want to put everyone's voice out there who's had authority on this subject so people can analyze it for themselves.
Right. Well, before we continue with this, because I didn't realize that describing the channel would involve so much of describing third position politics as well, because I was going to keep that for later. But obviously that
We're
is
short for
crucial
time,
to.
Woes. I'm just
Yeah,
trying to cram it in.
I know. Well, before we proceed, I want to say for the sake, because I know that this will be used against me if I in various ways if I don't say this. It's a disclaimer, and it is a truthful disclaimer that I am not a subscriber to third position politics. I don't see myself as a I'm not a fascist, but it's not. But it's also something that I know that a lot of people in the dissident right are curious about, and I've heard, and as you say, there is confusion about what the term actually means, and it is abused as well. So for the sake of clarity and for the sake of intellectual inquiry, you know, this is what we're going to talk about. But I just want to emphasize, this is not like retweeting does not equal endorsement. I'm not saying this is what I subscribe to or what anyone else should subscribe to. I see myself actually more as a high Tory politically, but that's for another day. So
bathrobe alone should let everyone know you're not a fascist, Woes. You
well, you'd think so. You'd think so. But okay, so let's go for it then. Why is there a need for a third position policy? I mean, what is the gap that it fills? What is the need that it responds to? Before we get into what it actually is.
Okay, so if we just look at our modern state right now, what third position adds is first regulation to the market. This is a taboo for some people, but this is a very, very necessary thing, because we've seen when there's no regulation on the market, when the sole driving motivator for individuals and corporations is to accumulate capital, all ethics go out the window. Their only goal is to make profit. And however they can make profit, they will. So if something is harmful, poisonous, sickening, spiritually or physically to someone, they have no problem selling that. And the proof is in the eating of the pudding as of what is today. We see what industries thrive. We see the low-hanging fruit in man is our lower selves, is whatever you want to call it, our id, our reptilian self, those basic drives in us that to feed ourselves, to, like I always say, full belly and empty balls, and you have a docile mass. And this is what it is. This is, you have your fast food, you have your fast pornography, you have anything else they can sell you that will harm you, even if it's cancerous. But as long as it's making a dollar, this is what matters to the corporations. They don't care about the health of the people they're dealing with. They don't feel a connection to any of their fellow citizens. Like here in America, our businesses, they're not really concerned if their processed meats are heightening the risk of cancer. They don't care. As long as there's 1 billion served, they're happy. As now they just want to make it 2 billion and 3 billion served, et cetera, et cetera. So the first thing it does is it gives this oversight over these businesses. But much more importantly, instead of nationalizing the businesses, it nationalizes the people. So if you have a structure in a society that rewards being a part of the society, improving society, instead of awarding just accumulating capital by any means necessary, you automatically take care of these devious merchants that are feeding on the low-hanging fruit of what man is, of what sells today, what's popular today. So, and once again, the stats will show you exactly how much processed garbage foods are eaten, how much porn is consumed online, how much people are stuck playing video games in their room as Rome burns around them. So as all this is going on, the people pushing it obviously don't give a damn about anyone but themselves. So if you nationalize these people, if you create that kind of society, they give a damn about that. They wouldn't push these harmful things. So that's one application of it. Another one is it's an identity of a people. So now you have globalism going all over, and they want to globalize the whole world. They want to make everyone Hollywood. They want McDonald's everywhere. They want everyone to have the same access to porn as we do in America. It's like they want this for the world. So third position is a heavily nationalistic thought. It believes each nation should define their own destiny and go towards that and not be interrupted or manipulated by foreign entities, by any kind of imperialism, be it psychological or physical. So that's, I think, one of the biggest things we need to fight, because the first two positions, communism and capitalism, they're completely globalist. They want to homogenize the peoples, the ethnicities, the races, the religions, and everything under like the global order of the dollar. And this is something we third positionists heavily reject, because at the core of what we are is spirituality in there. Something deeper meaning of life instead of just pursuing capital, just pursuing materials. And that's kind of the hamster wheel we're on now. We're born into this life from nothing, and then we get into some slave wave job, and then we buy, consume, and then we die. And then It's like, well, what was really the point of this whole existence if it was just to live in seeking out hedonism? And it's, to me, it's a very nihilistic existence, just consuming. So this is what we reject fully. I mean, this is what the third position is essentially a fanatic. The third position becomes a religion to them. Their politics become the religion to them. And it is because we see, you know, the threat of the individual capitalism. We see the threat of this globalism, that it must be something dealt with, not only to save humanity, but to save the future of humanity. As we see, it's like, look at how we're plundering this earth now. Look at how this globalization is killing demographics everywhere. It's like these things cannot be preserved to have any kind of higher existence in the future if it is not stopped. And you need something nationalistic, and not just in name, but strongly nationalistic and masculine to kind of stop the barbarians at the gate. And this is why third position is always a reactionary philosophy. When you see it pop its head up, it's usually in reaction to liberalism or communism gone wrong. And I think we're kind of in those stages today.
Well, yeah, those are two ideologies. If we talk about them as ideologies, communism and capitalism, as you say, they are globalistic in nature. They're also anti-spiritual in nature. They are material in and of themselves, that they are very destructive. I mean, this is why any state, third position or not, has regulations on capitalism, because otherwise capitalism will become a hugely destructive force. But, well, what is the difference then? What is the difference between third position? I know you said that they nationalize the people rather than... why is it necessary to nationalize, to go for third position politics in order to combat unbridled capitalism instead of just instead of just regulating capitalism?
Because you want a regulation isn't enough, because you can put regulations and still have harmful things, poisons to people. Part of the core concept of third position thought is creating a better man, because you want a collectivized group of people individually reaching their peak capabilities, all channeled towards a common direction. This is how you get your best results in whatever you're doing, whether it's a sports team, whether it's military, whether it's a business setup. You want the best people for the job who you're going to accomplish the best things from. It's, you know, with these kind of people push towards this goal, which doesn't exist in I guess your Keynesian type of economics. This is what's lacking there. There is no common goal. There is no nationalistic identity, something that brings us together. So, well, what makes us brothers? What makes us citizens? If we are an extended family, as the third positionist believes, as a nationhood has looked at themselves, then what makes us that? It's not just our ability to sell things to each other. It's we have to have a common goal, a common struggle that unites us. This builds brotherhood. It works on sports teams. It works in prisons. It works in military. It's like this thing of brotherhood is built. And to have that, you need the common toil, the common struggle towards the common destiny. And all these other economic philosophies don't offer that, because third position is not an economic philosophy. It is a philosophy, like I said, it's anti-materialistic and anti-individualistic. So what stems from that, whatever economics is created from that, like in Italy, corporatism, or like in Spain, syndicalism, whatever kind of economics comes from it is just a result of the party trying to figure out the best and most effective way to reach their goals. So like there's no set, here's what's different from capitalist economics and communist economics and fascist economics, when we've seen in different parts of the world, third position parties have had different economic platforms. It's just what fit them culturally. What do they agree with? What works best with them? It's like, that's all on the people to decide.
Yeah. So it's flexible in that way. It doesn't subscribe to any particular policies, even let alone economic systems. It's really what works for each individual ethnos.
Yeah. Let me just read a quote to you from Giovanni Gentile here, or Gentile, as the Italians will LARP about, the origins and doctrines of fascism. He says, and this is like the fascist philosopher. Like if people want to learn on third position thought, you check out Giovanni Gentile, Origins and Doctrines of Fascism. But he says fascism was not an association of believers, but a party of action that had need not of programs of particulars, but an idea that indicated a goal and thereby a way to be followed with resolute will. So it's a resolute will. I'm sorry. So that's it. It's nothing that's laid out there as these are, like, I hate these people. They do these videos like, how do you tell what fascism is? Here's the 14 steps. It's like, well, no, that's not fascism. That never has been as being expressed here. It's just a belief of a direction and place we should be in. And everything else political that manifests from it is our steps on that path. And so that is the creation of it. It is a goal and an idea created in man of greatness of a people. And how you accomplish that is through what manifests through politics, through economics and everything else in the society.
Right. Sorry, I wasn't sure. I had a question stored up and now I've forgotten what it was. That's really annoying. Oh, yes. There was the quote from, I think it was Mussolini, who about that the state is not blind under fascism. Under his fascism, obviously, that's proper, when the state was the sovereign entity rather than the people. He said that we don't just provide the safe structure or the borders and then just leave people to their fate. We have an idea of what their fate should be and how we're going to direct them toward, how we're going to assist them in getting to that that destiny. And he said that, well, under capitalism or whatever, the state acts blind. It is not able to assist people.
No, yeah, not at all. Well, this is why when you see in a lot of these third position societies, you had nationalized education, you had nationalized healthcare. This was true meritocracy. It didn't matter what you were born and what wealth you were born into. You had the same chance as the privileged rich kid to go to the finest schools if your intellect took you there, if your abilities took you there, if your desire took you there. So this is, it's giving you the direction. And then on top of that, with healthcare as well, if we're going to be a part of this extended family, we're going to be in this nationhood and you contribute to it, then why shouldn't the state be able to contribute to your health, to take care of you when you need the help? Since you're there providing and sacrificing for the common good throughout your life, why shouldn't you have that security? And same with education. Why should you go into debt? We send our kids into debt. My wife's still paying off debt. And it's you know, she's been out of school for 8 years now. So it's like, why do we do this to ourselves? Why do we accept this system? Why would a nation or state that gave a damn about its citizens do this to us? They obviously don't. And that is different. And people may you know, harp about, oh, it's just, you know, totalitarianism, it's just dictatorship. But if people look into it and see for themselves, they'll see the economy, the health of the people and all these societies improved. And everything, whether people like to acknowledge it or not, everything in life has a hierarchy. Today, the merchant class is the hierarchy in this modern society we live in, whether people acknowledge it or not. I would advise them to check out my video on Edward Bernays' propaganda. And see like how advertisement molds you into what you want to be mold, what they want you to be molded into. And you always have this hierarchy. So it's just natural order. And it's frustrating when people kind of deny that there's a hierarchy in natural order and they think they're above it and beyond it, but they're living in it right now. And and no matter what society we live in, that's always going to show itself. So I prefer to have people who show they give a damn about me, about my nation, and about our future in charge than a merchant class.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it like that, yes, it's very understandable. As some people have said in the chat, I mean, there have been quite a few people disagreeing with that. If not what you've been saying, then at least the third position politics, the ideology. And one of the complaints was that if you want to ruin anything, nationalize it. What would you say to that?
I don't know. He's okay. Then globalize it. Then have your way. I mean, how do you respond to something?
Well, I guess he would say that it's not a choice between those two. You just don't need to nationalize it. But yeah,
once again, you do. If you don't have a nation,
yeah, if you don't do that, then it's going to be prey to globalism.
Yes, yes. You kind of need an identity. You need a border, you know, and maybe we'll even get a wall on our border over here. But no, you kind of need these things. We need some kind of identifier. We have certain cultures, traditions that kind of unify people and ethnicities, religions. So it's like you should build on these things. So you get strength through these things. We shouldn't avoid them.
Yeah, and there was another comment about the government being incompetent. What would you say about that? I mean, also corruption in government as well.
For sure.
I mean, if you're going to put something under their control, then, you know, how do you know it's mm-hmm. not going to fuck it up?
They're like blaming the gun for the murder is what they say. Well, oh, government's incompetent. No, these slime bags that are in position right now are corrupt. That's what's going on. It's not government's incompetent. They're corrupt. And we're being used. We're wage slaves to keep this system going. And sooner or later, they're going to give us universal basic income just to keep this system going even longer. So, yeah, it's not because government doesn't work. It's because there's a bunch of scumbags in there right now that don't give a damn and are filling their own coffers. So, yeah, it's you're blaming the weapon. Government is a tool. It's who's wielding the tool is what matters. So we should get good people to wield that tool is the argument.
Somebody just said in the live chat, he's like a woke Joe Rogan.
I get that sometimes because I train jiu-jitsu and I smoke pot. So it's kind of the same.
All right. I'll see if there are any other questions. I think there was a super chat, but I've now I forgot to have that open. So I haven't been good with the super chats tonight. I do apologize. Oh, yes. Somebody said, two of my favorite political cultural commentators of all time, Merry Christmas Woes, Culture Thug, and The Based Live Chat. So
that's great. Nice. Merry Christmas, yes.
Now, I should say that we only have 10 minutes left because obviously my next guest is due on at that time. So if you do have any questions, please post them now. It is. I mean, it might have been 2015. I interviewed a guy who is a national socialist, as he described himself. He's an English guy. Unfortunately, the audio quality was so bad that I couldn't up. It was Skype recording, and the audio quality was so bad that I just couldn't upload it. But it was. He was putting it very much in the terms that you're putting it in. Basically, if you're going to care about a nation exists, it has a people, and if you're going to care about the people, then the best way to do that is with National Socialism, as he put it. And you're calling it third positionism. Because otherwise, it's a way of conceiving of the state as a way to protect a people. It's their home. In the current paradigm, the nation and the nation is just a place, a geographic region, and it has some inhabitants who have no particular connection to it. New inhabitants can come in and they have just as much connection to it. And the state, therefore, doesn't have any particular responsibility towards anyone. It's just a sort of contract. Sign the dotted line and now you're here and you have as few rights to a future here as everyone else, including those who have got ancestry going back 1,000 years in this land. You know, it sort of destroys the sense of place and ownership and, well, Heimat, to use the German word. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think National Socialism, third position, is explicitly about protecting these things.
And enhancing, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that other political systems or ideologies also try to protect these things, some of them. But in this ideology, it's explicit that this is what it's about. It's like under conservative Britain, yes, there are the British people, that yes, they are a genetic ethnic group and a cultural group, and they are obviously our first priority, but then that can change over time. And now they're not, and now other people's are our priority, or no one's our priority. And so, whereas with National Socialism, that cannot happen. It's explicit.
Yeah. And what's even scarier today is people are starting to identify by the materials they purchase. Like this, if you're into the same music, same kind of clothes, same kind of pop culture scene, people are building identification off of that more so than anything deeper than that, and which is truly a scary thing. But I think that's how globalism works. I think that's how they bland down all the traditions and they get their global consumer world to work, is that rip us all from our roots and plant us in something new, which is just stupid little consumers that buy the stuff they shine and wave in front of our eyes.
Mm.
Okay, I mean, that's the scariest thing. We're just mindless consumers right now, and we're just bred for that to keep that system going.
Yeah, I remember Morgoth wrote an article where he was talking about humans as battery hens, where what you end up with is a situation where the powers that be simply want a public who are as pliable as possible and just as easy to manipulate, as easy to handle as possible. So it's really ugly. Just like the farmer or the factory just wants battery hens who... they have no needs, they have no desires, they're very easy to use, to handle, and that's it. It's really degrading and dehumanizing. Some questions here. What are your thoughts on fascist economic libertarians like Christopher Cantwell?
Oxymoron.
Yeah, because you're saying it's a direct contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
And to be a third positionist economic libertarian. Right, okay.
I'm an anarchist communist. I mean, what?
Okay. You cannot have economic libertarians. No. It's just directly
contradictory. That's just word salad right there. That's all that is.
Okay. What historical model do you most look to? I think they mean third position.
Yeah. Personally, I like the Italian model. I like the corporatism, the economic system of corporatism. I like definitely when we're talking about youth, I like what the Germans did. I thought they're very structural in that. I thought they had the best results from it, from the youth programs. But overall, I would have to say the Italian model is my personal favorite. But I don't think in America we'll have the Italian model. Like I said, it's organic. We're different country here, different thing we're dealing with. So it's going to have to be Americana in belief. It can't be acting like LARPing as Italian black shirts. It has to be Americana, what pops up in America. But yeah, a lot of my inspiration comes from the Italian model.
Let's talk about America, possible third positionist future for America. How would that... What characteristics do you think that would have?
Through populism. I think 2016 really, really, really white-pilled me. I had just been black-pilled up until that point. And then when Trump got that first 30%, and Trump was speaking solely on a nationalistic rhetoric, whether he was Dog Wilson or not, whether he knew what he was doing or not, it's irrelevant. What was important was that 30% showed itself. Then Bernie Sanders comes up, and then there's a whole crowd behind him as well. Then you have Trump and Bernie now, two people who are completely, even though if it's a facade with Bernie, right, it's the image of Bernie is what people are attracted to. An economic system outside of capitalism is what people are accepting with Trump, because he said, free trade, but fair trade, which, come on, is contradiction in itself, too. So it's kind of a dog whistle there. And then Bernie, with his, social welfareism, was attracting a lot of people. So that showed us there's a populist middle ground there with the mass of people. Call it silent majority, call it whatever you want. But that crowd is there to be seized upon. So right now in American politics, the left are seen like, I caught a little bit of your last conversation, and I think you guys are right. All the interesting thoughts and conversations are on the right, but in the mainstream perception, it's on the left. you're having these, you know, pseudo-socialists pop up and like, oh, how revolutionary are they? Oh, they're young-blooded Republicans, old, you know, dead white males and are soon to be dead white males and, you know, stuffy capitalism. But it's that crowd. The only reason that exists, because there's no third position right now. There's no third position voice out there saying, hey, it's not just capitalism or welfare socialism. There's something else. And there's something else most of you would agree on. So I think that's upon individual people who believe in third position philosophy is to eventually get involved in politics and run on third position platforms in this country. I think we can do what Huey Long did so long ago in America, is you can build a populist revolution. You can get people behind that. We just need to get out there and do it. We don't have the money or the support or anything, but simply through having people running for positions and putting that message out there, I think we start the wave. So that's what I think. I think it's our opportunity right now. And all over Europe too, we're seeing a pushback on what's been going on. And not only in Europe, in Brazil, in the Philippines. So we're seeing it, you know, throughout the world. So I think this is prime time for us, for people to understand, take part, get active. Understand what you believe in, get active, promote it, go out there. Don't LARP online. You know, don't say things online you wouldn't say to people in their face in public. Go out there, be someone with integrity, put your message out there, and people will listen to you. If they understand you're a person of integrity, they'll listen to what you have to say. And even if they don't at first, keep coming back till they do. It's our time to seize it. If things don't change, woes, within the next 10 years, it's only because we didn't deserve it to change, and we deserve this noose around our neck because we did nothing to stop it. So I think the moment's ours to seize. I just think we need to manifest the will to do that. And I think we're in that stage.
I mean, what I would say is, I don't think that, certainly in Britain, I don't think that the public would be amenable to to fascism. But I do think, and I don't know about European countries, I'm not sure so much. Probably some of them would be. But I don't think if you called it fascism, they would be amenable to it, because there's too much baggage with that word. But I do think that people want something new. I think there's very much a feeling of there has to be something. There has to be some new thing, some probably radical that takes over from the current paradigm. And I don't know if it would qualify as national socialism. Maybe in some ways it would. It depends how much you stretch that definitions. I mean, if you have the NHS in Britain, is that fascist? Is that national socialism? Some would say it is. You know.
Well, we can't. It's the ideas that matter, right? The labels. It doesn't matter. They're like, if I'm running for any kind of position, they're going to call me a fascist and this and that and that. I mean, this is unavoidable, but it's you have to stick to the principles of the beliefs. And I think too often we get trapped in the corner of trying to defend ourselves against these labels, these false narratives they create, and they attack us through the false narratives they create. We spend too much time saying, no, I'm not that false narrative. Here's what I really am. I think we just need to stick with our principles and put the message out there. It's not going to be easy, obviously. I mean, this is, look at international finance. Like, they're just going to say, hey, you know, you win, guys. You made the best argument. Here it is. It's not. That's why we need something populist. And we're like I said, we're seeing in France, it's pretty positive. We're seeing at least, who knows how long it's going to go and what they're going to achieve from it. But we're seeing it's there. And that fire can be kindled again. And we see that fire can be kindled in numerous other countries as well. So it's definitely there. It's just a will to seize it. We just don't have a voice. There's no true, in America, like, alternative politics out there right now. It's red team versus blue team. And there's no voice.
Yeah, and there's a ridiculous, these are the only two options. And they are radically different options when really they're the same option anyway. But we'll have to end now. So, and I'm sorry that it's so short, but this has been a busy night, and I do apologize, but there it is. So the last question: what are five essential books to read to learn about third position philosophy, in your opinion?
Five books. Let's see. First, The Origins and Doctrines of Fascism by Giovanni Gentile. For My Legionaries by Cadrianu, a Romanian Iron Guard. The Codex Fascismo, volumes 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I believe. by H.R. Morgan. And this, The Origins and Doctrines of Fascism and the Codex Fascismo by H.R. Morgan are probably the two most important, because they give you, first, understanding what the core beliefs of fascism is, and second, or what third position philosophy is, and second, about the how it's been applied in different countries throughout the world, what they universally shared and where they differed nationally. So those are definitely important. The Philosophy of Fascism by Mario Palmari, also important. I think that's five. I'm not even sure. And The Doctrine of Fascism by Mussolini. So these would be five books, four or five, however much it was, that you should definitely check out and would give you an understanding of what the philosophy is and how it's manifested into the real world.
All right. Excellent. Let's leave it at that. That's been brief. I'm sorry that it's been so brief. Somebody in the live chat saying it's a real shame. I agree, but it's the best that I can do. So, yeah. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Cultured Thug, thank you very much. I'm sorry it's been such a short slot, but
that's fine.
Thank you for taking
part. Thank you for having me on here. And yeah, check out the channel, guys, if you want to know more about third position thought.
Okay.
Happy Yule and, to you. Merry Christmas.
And thank you, and Merry Christmas to you, and Happy Yule. Okay, I'll be back very shortly with Jesse Lee Peterson. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, please check out Culture Thug's channel, and thank you for watching, and I'll see you soon.